in 5 or 10 or 15 years, what we think of as, you know, mobile operating systems, those are going to be the ones that people use more often than our traditional desktop operating systems.
Welcome to the User Defenders Podcast, where we interview successful UX designers who fight for the user in order to inspire and equip you to do the same. And now, here's your host, Jason Ogle.
Greetings, User Defenders. Welcome to episode 14. Today, I had the great privilege of talking to Adobe Principal Designer, Mr. Subtraction himself, Coy Vinh. Some inspirational topics in store for you today, such as our discussion of prototyping on a tablet, which he's hugely impacted defining what that process and workflow looks like over there at Adobe, especially now known as their app called Comp. So very interesting stuff. You don't want to miss this interview with Coy Vinh. Coy Vinh is an experienced designer, prolific blogger, and the principal designer at Adobe. He has already and continues to make huge impacts in the creation of tools and methods toward designing on the go using mobile devices. He's the former New York Times design director and one of the 50 most influential designers in America, according to Fast Company. He's also an author who's written books like Ordering Disorder, Grid Principles for Web Design, and recently released How They Got There, that interviews top designers and how they got where they are, which is a great parallel and compliment to this show. Coy, I'm super excited to have you on User Defenders today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Absolutely. So as you know, we're taking kind of a fun superhero approach to the show. And, you know, it's sort of a way to differentiate the show, but also a way to really highlight our guests, not unlike how you wrote your book, I think. And so that's why I'm real excited to get into your story. So every superhero has a secret identity and origin story. Let's talk about yours. I'd like to start the show by you taking a few moments to give us a look into your personal life.
Well, I've got a family. I've got three young kids, a six-year-old and twin three-year-olds. So that keeps me pretty busy when I'm not working.
I can imagine.
There's not a lot of downtime for me just to, you know, choose from a number of activities to entertain myself with.
Understandable. Yeah. They don't like to sleep, especially when they're real small.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, but they're awesome.
Oh, so great.
So I guess you could say my secret identity is family man.
Oh, I love it. That's great, man. That's I can identify with that myself. I have seven kids, believe it or not.
Oh my God. So I've got nothing to complain about.
So tell us your origin story, Coy. What inspired you to pursue UX design as a career?
Well, it's funny that the theme of your show is superheroes, because that's really what got me interested in the visual arts to begin with. I mean, I was a comic book nerd as a kid. I used to spend hours just poring over comic books and learning to draw from them. And that was my first real passion, was being able to draw so that I could kind of participate in that fantasy world. But as I got older, you know, I started thinking about maybe I could make a career out of my ability to draw. So I went to art school and studied painting and illustration and sort of stumbled across graphic design while I was there, because I didn't really know what that was when I was in high school. And graphic design was an entry point for computers and technology. And then I got more and more interested in computers and technology and started working on the web, and, you know, then became really sort of taken with the idea of designing for digital media, designing user experiences and products. That's kind of how I got here.
Love it. I'm a huge comic book nerd, more formally in my childhood, but love Wolverine. In fact, in junior high, I used to try to get detention every day so that I could sit there and draw Wolverine.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So, Coy, if you weren't doing this for a living, what would be your second career choice and why?
I think I'd probably be doing something in film. I think I was not a huge movie nerd when I was a kid. Yeah, we didn't have tons of money, so I was not going to the theater like every week, like a lot of kids. And we didn't have a VCR till later, like when I was in high school. I mean, I was really just invested in comics and reading. But later on, I sort of discovered the magic of film and how how deep of a field it is, how sort of endless like the fascinations are, and how you could spend all your time just trying to watch, you know, like the most interesting films out there, and you still would only be able to make a dent. So I really, really have a strong passion for film, and would love to be part of that world if I weren't doing what I'm doing.
Hmm. You know, I love that you said film. It seems like a lot of really great designers have some sort of at least affinity for film, or even some involvement in working in the film industry. And I just love that parallel between, you know, designing for people and also solving problems and telling a story. So I love that. That's really great.
Yeah, it's so many different aspects of film, different dynamics in film that just make for, you know, hours of endless study, and the more you look, the more you're rewarded. And I think that's my favorite part about it.
I love that. Who has been the biggest inspiration in your work, and why?
Well, I spent a lot of time early on, and still do occasionally return to the work of Massimo Vignelli and his wife Leila Vignelli, Vignelli and Associates. They were these titans of the, you know, the mid to late 20th century modernism school of design, like really, really wonderfully precise balance of visual design and visual immersion. I think I've learned so much from there, even though their work is almost exclusively in the analog form, I've borrowed quite a bit to apply to the digital realm.
Wasn't there a documentary made about this couple on Netflix?
Yes, there was. I actually haven't seen that. Oh. I have so little time to watch things these days.
Yeah, well, understandable.
Yeah.
Well, I'll have to look into that. Maybe even mention that. Because I've been wanting to see that, and it's just really intriguing. This couple, they just are so passionate and have stayed so passionate about design and creating wonderful things for people. So I think there'd be a lot of inspiration gleaned from watching that.
Yeah.
And I think about some of the old designers too, like Dieter Rams, like he's, you know, really come into the foreground of kind of what we're doing today too, because we are so limited now to the screen sizes. The screen sizes seem to be getting smaller and smaller. And so you really have to be selective as to what design elements you choose from. I think a lot of these really clean designers are sort of making their way into this era, which is really cool, I think.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I think there's a lot to be learned from the world of physical product design, industrial design, and Dieter Rams's body of work. There's so much in there that digital product designers can take inspiration from.
I know our listeners are going to do that too. We're going to look into that. What's one habit that you believe contributes to your success?
One habit. I pretty religiously work from my to-do manager every day. My to-do manager of choice is called Todoist.
Yeah.
And I think it's a phenomenal system. And I'm constantly putting things in there and then referring back to it to keep me on track and make sure I get things done. And that is one of the key tools that I've used over the past decade to really get the things I want to get done.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And it's, you know, there's the saying, what gets scheduled gets done. And I think having a running list of things that you're revisiting too on a daily basis, you know, even the night before, planning your to-do list for the next day is incredibly helpful. And then it helps you to prioritize what gets done. And then you feel really good about checking those things off, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great feeling to be able to power through a whole slew of to-do items during the course of the day. But it's, you know, the best reward is, you know, you set goals for yourself or you take on projects and, you know, bit by bit you chip away at them, and then you manage to get them completed and launched. And I really think that comes down to being able to break down huge projects into little bite-sized chunks and think about getting them done piece by piece. Mm.
Can you tell us about one thing you're working on that you're most excited about?
I can't pick more than one.
Okay.
I mean, that's the thing. I'm always juggling tons of projects, whether it's here at Adobe or, you know, side projects or other things that I'm working on. And I've come to learn, like, that's what really keeps me going. Like, I've been in situations where I've had to devote all my energy into a single thing. And you know, there's lots of rewards for that. It's really valuable to be able to really focus and put all the time and energy that you have into one single pursuit. But I've come to believe, like, what really works for me is being able to do lots of different things. So, you know, sometimes at Adobe, I'm working on product stuff. Sometimes I'm working on strategy. Sometimes I'm working on partnerships. Sometimes I'm, you know, thinking about like ways we can change the org. And then at home or in my off hours, I'm thinking about, you know, building new products or, you know, writing a book like I just did, or, you know, thinking about a new blog post. So, like, all this stuff seems disingenuous to say, but I really believe it's true. It's sort of all equally interesting to me, and the variety of different pursuits, I think, is really essential to me to keep me going, because you know, when I hit a sort of sour patch on one, I can, you know, get re-energized from, you know, a different project that's in a different stage.
Yeah, I like that philosophy too. I think it helps to keep you inspired, right? To not just kind of get in the trudges of just one thing, but to be able to sort of kind of switch. If you're starting to hit a wall in one, you can sort of kind of veer off into the other one, and then by the time you're kind of done with that other one, you might have solved the problem to the original.
Yeah,
does that happen sometimes?
Yeah. Like, walking away from a problem is very effective too. Like, you know, I've often spent tons of time trying to work out a solution to a specific problem and gotten nowhere, and then, you know, turn my attention elsewhere, and then, you know, a couple hours or days or weeks later, I come back to the original problem and I realize that I'm able to apply a whole different approach to it and come up with a solution that I wouldn't have been able to otherwise.
That's a great takeaway. Be willing to walk away from your problems, because they'll be there. They'll still be waiting for you when you get back.
Yeah, if they're thorny enough problems, they're not going to go anywhere.
Let's get into your transformation. Coy, what's your design superpower?
I think, you know, for me, it's the ability to articulate the design process, the thinking that goes into the design that I make, or tease out the thinking that contextualizes other design solutions. And that most often comes out in my writing and in, you know, like, the blogging that I do. Like, I write a lot about design there, but also comes out, like, day to day, like, being able to talk to, you know, my teammates and, you know, executives and, you know, partners about design and its value, and about all the different strands of thinking and logic and reasoning that go into figuring out the design solution.
That's great, and I love the takeaway of blogging too. I think that every designer should blog and should share their knowledge, and it helps us become better communicators. And really, as we know, design is all about communication.
Yeah, I agree. I think for me, like, what I've learned is I like to write for myself. I've dabbled in writing for other publications, but at the end of the day, like, I actually don't enjoy that so much, because I realize that the only reason I want to write is to work out ideas for myself, and I don't want to necessarily work with an editor or, you know, fit into another editorial style or anything like that. I just want to figure out ideas on my own and publish them and see what comes back from them. So I don't think you have to become a writer. I think you should you should embrace writing as a way of helping you think about and become better at design.
No, oh, that's so good. Somebody I follow on a podcast, Michael Hyatt. He's a blogger, but he also is a product creator and really helps other people, you know, in their career and life. But one of the things that he said about blogging, which I really love, is that's his workshop. So blogging's his workshop. That's where he gets his ideas out and also finds validation. And actually, a lot of his blogs have become products that he's done quite well with. So I really like that kind of thinking and just writing for yourself.
Yeah, I like the idea of thinking of your blog as your workshop, too, because a lot of times I might start writing a blog post with one assumption or one premise. And through the act of writing, I come to understand like my own thinking about it better. And in a way, the blog post is just my thought process or just the work product of me figuring stuff out on the fly.
I'm Dan Mall. I'm a husband, a dad, and the founder and director of Design Collaborative in Philadelphia called Super Friendly. And now to you, dear listener, use your super hearing to listen to the User Defenders podcast with Jason Ogle.
So I'm going to turn the tables now. What's your design kryptonite, Coy?
My design kryptonite. Let's see. What is my design kryptonite? I think I don't like design that takes itself too seriously. I think it's really right and proper that designers should apply a lot of rigor to their work and to be really invested and passionate about it. But I don't think design that creates all sorts of elaborate, you know, context or reasoning around it. It's just that stuff doesn't work for me. You know?
Design for the sake of design?
It's not just that. It's just, I think at the end of the day, design is not, I mean, I think it's wonderful that people are becoming more and more aware of design, but at the end of the day, design is something that should be should just play a part in delivering the product or the experience to the end user, and it shouldn't be it shouldn't be so overwhelmingly you know, invested in itself that it steals the spotlight from the content that it's trying to deliver.
Definitely. I can see what you mean there.
Yeah.
So this next one's kind of fun. And I preface this question with, you know, we know that everybody, you know, in their journey doesn't get there alone, you know, and we all need each other. You know, but this question is really, it's for you in the fact that you certainly have come a long way in your career and you've done some amazing things and you continue to do so. So this question is fun. It's, what would your UX design superhero name be?
My superhero name?
Yeah.
I kind of think, isn't that my blog name? Subtraction.com?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah, I often... Well, like when I create user accounts sometimes, I'll just call myself Mr. Subtraction.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. There it is. And could you give us a quick, I know that there's a backstory to that. Can you tell us a quick backstory to Subtraction?
Yeah. Subtraction is, well, I mean, the reason I have it first and foremost is because it was available and it seemed too good not to to acquire. So
makes sense.
But for me, it fits in perfectly because it's all about, you know, reduction and minimalism or taking away, you know, the unnecessary.
Love that. So this next question is sort of a toughie, but it's an important one. It's, you know, none of us like to talk about or think about or even dwell on our failures. But we know that our failures are kind of what has defined us and helped propel us forward in our learning and in our growth. So could you take a moment and just tell us a story about your biggest, what's been your biggest failure in your career?
Oh, sure. I mean, that's easy. In 2011, I co-founded a startup called Mixel, and we created an iPad app for creativity for that combined aspects of your social graph and creating collages. And I'm really proud of what we did, but ultimately the company was not able to sustain itself, and we had we were acquired by Etsy. Oh. So we had a not terrible, you know, outcome, but yeah. I still think of its failure as very painful and something that, you know, I wish had turned out differently.
Hmm. So there's further details. Do you care to divulge those or?
What specifically? I mean,
What was the failure part of that?
It's just the app itself, it built a really loyal user base, but it wasn't able to build a big enough user base to really catch fire. And so, you know, we just didn't have the numbers to justify additional rounds of venture funding.
So talk about failing fast, though, huh? You were able to still, you know, sell that to Etsy, you know, or, and so that was a good example of failing fast. You know, what do you want our listeners to take away from that story?
Don't build a social collage app. Or maybe do build a social collage app. I mean, like build on top of the, you know, what we tried to do in Phil. I mean, no, seriously, I think that the thing to take away from that is, you know, like what we learned is we were great on developing product. We weren't great at, you know, getting traction and marketing and creating awareness and helping people discover the app.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Definitely good to consider the marketing aspect and validating and all that stuff. So the next question is, one of my favorite lines from Tron was when he said, "I fight for the users." How do you fight for your users, Coy?
In a big org like Adobe, like that's part of the designer's job. They really have to sort of maintain the focus on what, you know, our customers want, what our users, you know, are trying to accomplish when they open up one of our apps, because there's always a ton of things that could potentially distract you. You know, the company has big ambitions. I mean, rightly so.
Yeah.
There's always a lot of momentum towards addressing those goals, those ambitions directly. But sometimes achieving those goals can only be done through focus on the user. And, you know, especially in big companies, it can be easy to forget that. So designers here, that's really how they fight for the users.
Excellent. I love how you've really been instrumental in bringing the design process into, you know, like a mobile environment, like through what is now known as Adobe Comp, right?
Yes.
Can you take a minute to just talk about what, you know, I guess the process behind that or the thinking behind that and maybe some of the obstacles? I know our listeners would love to hear more about that.
I mean, Adobe Comp is, I think, a great example of the reason that I'm here. I mean, I think Adobe really has this strong belief that, you know, in 5 or 10 or 15 years, what we think of as, you know, mobile operating systems like iOS and Android, those are going to be the ones that people use more often than our traditional desktop operating systems like OS X and Windows. So we are trying to make, you know, creative workflows really viable on mobile operating systems, and you know, particularly on iOS, because that's where the vast majority of designers are. So
yeah,
Comp is a way of reimagining the process of laying out, you know, ideas, composing type and image and color blocks and other visual elements to create, you know, graphic design solutions, whether they're for print or web or mobile or what have you. And so it's really optimized around the multi-touch interface. It's not like a one-to-one translation of Illustrator or InDesign or Photoshop from the desktop. It's really about creating an experience that's truly native to the mobile operating system that really makes sense for the mobile operating system. And we have other apps too that do similar things, you know, that take things that we do on the desktop and reimagine them for the way we want to work on, you know, iPads and iPhones, like Photoshop Sketch, which is a drawing and painting program, or Photoshop Mix or Fix, which are painting and retouching programs, or photo manipulation and retouching programs. So, you know, what we're trying to do over here is sort of bring the future a bit closer and create whole new ways of working on mobile that are, you know, more attuned to the unique characteristics of these devices and more attuned to the way the next generation of creative people are going to work.
As you know, I ask for ratings and reviews at the end of every show, and it's because it really makes a difference in getting more visibility to the show, and it's really simple to do. You just have to go to userdefenders.com/review or tap the link in the show notes. If you're on your phone, it'll actually take you right to the reviews tab on your phone. I just really appreciate it, and I'd like to start sharing some of these reviews that really stand out to me. So here's one right here from Transpire on November 4th. This is actually the first review the show ever got. He says, he or she says, "What a nice surprise to find this podcast. Right off the bat, in episode one, the host pulled in a former Apple superhero who was able to blur the lines between developer, engineer, and designer. Great to peek behind the curtain at people's processes and experiences, as well as some of their painful lessons learned along the way. Years of experience condensed into some actionable steps you can use tomorrow. Plus, it's presented in a fun flavor with superhero theme. Bonus, terrific audio quality. Keep it going." Well, thanks so much, Transpire. I really appreciate you taking the time to leave that great review. It means a great deal, and it keeps us fighting on here in the show. So thank you. And again, I encourage you, Defenders, if you haven't yet, to get over there on iTunes and leave a rating and review. It would mean a great deal, and I will share the ones that really stand out. Thank you. You may have touched on this a little bit. My last question is one of my favorites. It's, what does the future of UX look like to you?
I mean, in terms of tools, I think there's going to be a lot that you can do on iPads and iPhones, if not, you know, everything. I think Apple has really spent a lot of time and energy, especially with iPad Pro and iOS 9, to making these devices more viable as work devices, and Adobe has spent a lot of time too making them viable as design devices. And I think that's going to really pay dividends as design continues to evolve. I think, you know, as, you know, Internet of Things becomes more and more prevalent, as, you know, like, you know, TV interfaces and watch interfaces become more prevalent, I think it only makes sense to create on these devices that are really sort of synonymous with that sort of expansion of you know, the user experience.
That's great. The future is still mobile, it seems like, and it's
for sure
moving at light speed. So, exciting time to be a designer.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Well, let's wrap up the show with superpowers. Coy, what's your most invincible UX resource or tool you can recommend to our listeners?
Most invincible UX resource or tool. I think, again, I have to pick just one.
You know, you don't have to. You can throw a couple out there, sure.
Every day I visit Designer News, Behance, Dribbble. I subscribe to various design newsletters. I think if I were to generalize them, I think cultivating a number of reliable sources for inspiration and for learning about the field that you're working in. I think that, for me, that's really invaluable.
Definitely agree. We had a guest, Andy Galpern, on episode 5, and one of the things she said was, you know, surround yourself with the people you want to become like. And so I think that makes a lot of sense. Appreciate that. If you could recommend one book to our listeners, what would it be and why?
Oh, well, it would be...
I mean, in addition to the books that you've written.
One book...
How They Got There, guys. Check it out. Seriously, it totally aligns with the reason the show exists.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely.
One book for user designers. I think the one book would probably be Alan Cooper's The Inmates Running the Asylum, which is all about thinking about product from the perspective of the user. That was really influential text for me.
Excellent. My first guest mentioned that as well. Daniel Hooper mentioned that, and I have not read it yet, so I need to kick myself in the butt and do it, because I've only heard great things about that book. It seems
sort of
like required reading.
Yeah, it's essential.
Awesome. Okay, so this is the last question, but it's a really important one, and I just want to ask you, Coy, what's your best advice for aspiring UX design superheroes?
My best advice is to write, I think. I think you'll get a lot of advice to follow your passion and to always be curious, et cetera. And I think all that is true, but I think how you turn that stuff into stuff that you can really use is to learn to write and learn to process it through, you know, your brain and articulate it in your voice.
I totally agree with you. And I think if we challenge ourselves, I think the best way we're going to write more is if we really challenge ourselves and schedule it to do it. Right?
Yeah.
Because it's too easy to kind of get caught up in, you know, in our day-to-day, and we're all really busy, but we got to make that time. We got to be intentional. And Ben Callahan was the last show we just launched, episode 8. He talked about how he did that. He and a buddy, they had a challenge where every day they would write something. And no matter what it is, you know, it was a challenge and see who, you know, who would kind of get to the finish line. But I think that's a good way to do it too. You know, get with a friend or a mentor and, you know, challenge each other in that way.
That's
great advice.
Totally. Yeah.
All right. Well, Coy, as we close, why don't you tell our audience the best way to connect and keep up with you?
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter at Coy. You can read my blog at subtraction.com. You can read my book at howtheygotthere.com, all one word. Just keep an eye on the internet.
There we go. And I got to mention too, your Twitter avatar. I don't know how long it's been that way, but you have like an old vintage Batman on there. It's an homage to your comic book love, I would imagine.
Yeah, that's true. Yes. The old Adam West Batman TV series.
There he is.
Yeah.
Do you ever plan on changing that?
Well, one day, if I can find something that I like. And also people sort of come to associate with me. So
that's true.
I'd love to find a high-res version of it, actually.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Defenders, if you find one, send it over to Coy. It's sort of like Tom from MySpace. Like, you know, it was always that same picture. It was like a really horrible picture. But I mean, if he had changed that, you know, and he becomes your first friend, that would have just been like, you know,
devastating.
Yeah, absolutely devastating. So anyway, Coy, I just want to thank you so much for being here today, man. It's been a real pleasure chatting with you. Appreciate all the value you added. I know our defenders are going to take so much away from this conversation. And I just want to say fight on, my friend.
Thanks for having me, Jason. It was really fun.
Right on. What a fascinating individual. Really love that talk with Coy. And I also especially dig his introspective approach to design and how he's been so inspired by many less-known design greats of old. Be sure to check out his amazing and beautifully designed book, How They Got There, that, not unlike this show, interviews today's leading designers and how they got where they are. I'll be sure to link that up in the show notes. Thanks again so much for listening. Don't take it lightly at all. I really appreciate you, and I'm always open to hear anything you have to say. So thank you.